Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, it's the third Tuesday of the month, so you know what that means. It's Sundial Book Club time. Well, this month, the book club that we're reading is Constant Craving. It's a romance novel, first one we've ever done. It's the story of Justine Lavoie, a newspaper publisher in St. Augustine, Florida. She's about to lose her newspaper as it's hemorrhaging money. That is until Rafael Menendez de Aviles shows up. He's a wealthy Miami developer, and he's, of course, Justine's former lover. So how has romance fiction changed in the world of Me Too? And why are most authors self-publishing instead of trying to get a publisher? Author Tamara Lush worked in Miami for the Miami New Times and is currently working for the Associated Press in St. Petersburg. And she joined us last week to talk about the book. Are romance novels fantasy? Is it the fantasy that women want?
I think for some women it is. I also think for some women, it's about falling in love over and over again and that feeling of falling in love, because that's a really wonderful feeling. But there's also something else about romance novels that I think many women are attracted to, and that's that the woman always gets what she wants in a romance novel. Whatever her obstacle is, and usually in a good romance novel, the woman has an obstacle other than needing to find a man. Justine has an obstacle. She wants to save her newspaper. And, you know, in a romance novel, the woman gets what she wants. And I think for many women, that's not, you know, maybe that's not that common. And I always like to say that in my novels, you know, my heroines get three things. They get their dream job, they get a man who gives them lots of orgasms, and they also get a puppy. So, so I like, you know, my heroines get exactly what they want.
You're a reporter. And you're part of the long lineage of reporters who became authors. Why did you want to write fiction?
I've always loved romance. Ever since I was a teen, I read steamy books. I cut my teeth on Jackie Collins and Sidney Sheldon and Jacqueline Suzanne, all those big sort of 80s, what they used to call bonkbuster novels. I loved those glitz and glamour kind of sexy novels of the 80s. And then I became a reporter and, you know, really focused on nonfiction for my entire life. But I always read romance. So I wanted to write a romance, and I just sort of never dared to. And I have to say that the rise of e-readers, the rise of indie publishing, and the rise of 50 Shades of Grey being an independently, it wasn't a self-published book, but initially it started out as a small press. And all of that gave me the courage to do it. I started 5 years ago this month, actually.
I'd imagine there's a lot of different types of romance novels.
Romance novels are, there's one criteria, and that it has to end, the story has to end in a mutually satisfying and happy and satisfactory way for the couple. The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks isn't a romance. If somebody dies at the end, it isn't a romance. Romeo and Juliet, not a romance. Titanic, not a romance. Pretty Woman is a romance. So romance is actually, as a genre, is a very specific thing. You can have a love story, which Nicholas Sparks' stories are, but not those are not romances. So you can have any kind of pairing. You can have male-female, male-male, female-female, male-male-female. You can have all sorts of permutations, but as long as everybody ends up happy at the end and in a satisfactory relationship that is happy for now or happy ever after, that's a romance.
Does that take away the fun, though, knowing that this is going to end and this person is going to end up with this person and happily ever after?
No, because that's the whole point. The whole point of a romance isn't the ending, it's the journey.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's talk about this book, Constant Craving, and this journey. So we followed the story of Justine Lavoie, and she's running the newspaper in St. Augustine. This, of course, the oldest town in Florida, and it belonged to her family, and the paper's in financial trouble. And then, of course, in comes Rafael Menendez de Aviles. He's a wealthy Miamian who could ruin her or help her, and they happen to be former lovers. Okay, where did this idea come from?
This story actually is an allegory for the newspaper industry. It's really about somebody who loves the business of journalism and newspapers, and who finds that she has to do certain things that she wants and maybe doesn't want to save her newspaper. So it came from really my experiences in journalism, of watching journalism over the last 20 plus years, and also you know, seeing what happens to newspapers around the country.
Where does Raphael come from? What inspired him?
He represents a couple of things. He represents New Florida as opposed to Old Florida. He represents the New Florida of Miami, the New Florida of immigrants, really. He's a Cuban American. He came from Cuba on a raft, and he represents New Florida. To some degree, though, a little bit, I would say that I also modeled him a bit after Jorge Perez of Miami, the wealthy billionaire developer. I wanted to set the story in Florida. I set most of my stories in Florida, and my initial scene that I created in the beginning of the book where the two of them were in class together, I felt it would be disingenuous to have a scene set in Miami in Everybody Be White. I am not Cuban, but I thought that if I had a story set in Miami or even partially set in Miami, it would ring false if there were no Cuban people. So I wanted the hero to be Cuban American.
Is he the villain, though?
He sort of is the villain. Raphael also is very much molded, and I think there are some molds in romance fiction when you start looking at Pride and Prejudice, when you start looking at those sorts of older romances. But I think there's also another archetype in romance novels, and that's the Gatsby archetype, only giving him a happy ending. And that's very much what Raphael is. Raphael is very much a self-made man who has always wanted to prove himself to Justine because she broke his heart by leaving him.
I always wondered in romance if you have that type of villain that you would find in other fiction or science fiction or anything else, the antagonist who is trying to stop the protagonist from achieving a goal. Are there really villains in romance novels?
In romantic suspense, there are very much traditional villains, serial killers and, you know, hitmen and all of the villains that you can think of. If you look at science fiction romance or paranormal romance, if you look at something like Twilight, there were vampires. There are lots of villains. In my particular book, the villain isn't to some degree Raphael because, you know, we don't know if his motivations for wanting to buy the paper are pure. Are they for revenge against Justine, or is he going to buy the paper to slap up some condos, which, let's face it, happens? Or is he there to impress her, or is he there because he really loves her? We don't actually know at the beginning.
I'm speaking with Tamara Lush, author of Constant Craving. That's a Sundial Book Club selection for the month of July. You can always join our book club by going to Facebook and searching Sundial Book Club. There you can engage in conversation with other readers, check out photos, and get updates on our upcoming conversations. I wonder if any of your readers who don't know anything about journalism or don't understand the business, if they reached out to you and said, wow, I think I understand something now I didn't know before.
I think a few have, and I think a few have felt very the opposite. Well, Constant Craving has done very well. My first book about journalists did not do as well as I expected. And I had pitched my first book, and actually I had pitched Constant Craving. I had an agent at one time, and Constant Craving didn't sell to any publisher, which is why I published it myself. It later went on to be a finalist in Romance Writers of America's Rita Awards, which is the genre's top honor. But no publisher would take it on. No publisher was interested. And I don't get the impression that publishers are all that interested in journalism tropes in the romance field. I have read some. Usually they involve, you know, like a wildly unrealistic publisher who's incredibly wealthy or like a reporter who's incredibly wealthy and dresses really well, which we all know that's not true. So it's hard for me to write journalism like a sanitized, very sexy version of a newsroom. If you notice that the newsroom scenes that I have are all pretty, with the exception of one with encounter with Justine and Raphael, they're all pretty unsexy. You know, he walks into the newspaper and for the first time and, you know, there's a half-eaten piece of pizza on a desk, kind of stinks in the newsroom, and everybody looks unshowered. I tried to be realistic.
Well, I could say, having spent some time, not just in our newsroom, but at the Miami Herald newsroom, yeah, I agree with you on all those levels. I find it interesting, Tamara, as you said, that, and I want to understand, I guess, the business of publishing when it comes to romance. Is it just a formula that they're looking for? And if you don't fit the formula, well, then too bad.
No, I think that that was the case at some point. I don't really feel that's the case now. I do think that they're looking for certain stories. I do think traditional publishing is looking for certain stories. But the reality is that with the exception of some very big romance authors, a lot of romance is self-published. Self-publishing is extremely common in the genre, and romance is a genre that's written by women and for women, and it has really been taken over by businesswomen who are very savvy, who self-publish and who market. And I know a lot of women who have been publishing themselves for years and make an extremely, extremely good living.
It seems then that so much has changed, because it used to be, you know, if you said self-published, there was almost a, oh, well, then it's probably the quality is not so good. Technology has changed that world. Amazon has changed that world. Now it's common.
Self-publishing is extremely common. I would say more in romance than other genres, although I'm seeing it in other genres as well. Stories like The Kissing Booth, Light as a Feather, the movie After, those all started as Wattpad books, online books that people wrote on their phones. And that's the publishing revolution. I firmly believe that the next great American novel will come from a place like Wattpad, because that's where, you know, young people are being creative.
I wonder what it's like for you, you know, if any of your coworkers, being a reporter, you still have your job, you know, they read your work, or if they come and say anything to you, considering again that your book's a little steamy.
They're a little steamy. And I was really worried about it at first when I first started writing. You know, I'm a reporter with the Associated Press. At the moment, I'm on leave until October, but I'm a reporter. You know, I interview the governor and I interview people. I've done lots of pretty high profile stories over the years. And I was worried about it. I was worried about how it would be received and perceived. And I actually went to my editors at the Associated Press and said, do you want me to write under a pen name? And they said, no, you can do whatever you want. They have more restrictions if I wanted to write nonfiction based off my job. But you know, they had no restrictions, and I have to hand it to them. They've been really, really cool about it, and they've really been so supportive of me. I like to think that I'm writing old-time newspaper serials with sexy times, and the journalism community has been nothing but supportive. Florida has a long history of reporters being genre fiction writers. I mean, we can name lots of them. We can look to Carl Hiaasen and Edna Buchanan, you know, Tim Dorsey. All reporters. So I think I'm just kind of following in the footsteps of a long tradition here in Florida.
I wanted to tackle a really heavy question here. How do romance writers tackle these issues that have been raised over the last couple of years with the Me Too movement, the issues of harassment, assault, and rape, and so forth?
I think it's a really important question, because there was a time in romance where it was more common, especially decades ago in historical romance novels, where, quite frankly, the heroine would be raped by the hero, or what we would consider now rape. And, you know, it was a scenario where the heroine would be taken by force. And I don't think that many writers today use those tropes. I think that we're pretty mindful, and I think we're becoming more mindful every year that passes. Like, I'm not sure that I could even write a Raphael now. I've moved away from writing more alpha heroes to writing what I call, and what we call in the romance world, cinnamon roll heroes, who are a little spicy and also a lot sweet and gooey at the core.
So, for example, I mean, this was part of the, I guess, the conversation around 50 Shades series, was this, that alpha male and the submissiveness, and, you know, getting into a lot of intense sexual scenes and even violence.
Right. You know, 50 Shades, it's such a tough thing to talk about, because it's overshadowed everything in the romance genre, or did for a long time. 50 Shades had the benefit of being very popular right as e-readers came online. And I think that that helped its popularity. I have some other theories about why people identified with that, you know, right at the time of a recession, coming out of a global recession. To some degree, I think that the popularity had to do with more with the aspiration and the and consumerism and the love of consumerism than actually the love between the two. That's my personal view. I'm not knocking it. I don't hate those books. I'm not somebody who's going to bash 50 Shades at all. But I do also think that there are readers who love to read about a submissive woman and an alpha male. That is just, that's a fact. And I'll say, if I see a book, I love Harlequin Presents, and that's very much a what they call a line, a category romance line about alpha males who are from Spain and Italy and Greece, and I love books that have to do with revenge and blackmail, and I love the Raphaels of fiction.
As social conventions around sex and gender are becoming more progressive, how's that changing in romance? I mean, do we see more LGBTQ romance novels, more polyamory novels?
Absolutely. There are people who are writing polyamory, male-male romances, female-female romances. There's a whole genre that's called reverse harem, where a woman falls in love with more than three or more men. And I think that there's growing acceptance, although I think there's still some work to do. For a long while, I feel like the genre maybe wasn't as accepting as LGBTQ romances, but I think it's getting better. Just like with diversity, there's a real debate over the need of diverse romance. If, for instance, Harlequin is offering a scholarship to own voices and diverse writers to get more diverse voices in. I don't think it's something that traditional publishing has been particularly great at, probably across the board, but especially in romance. But I think the indie revolution means that more women of all colors and walks of life can tell their stories. That's one of the beauties of indie publishing.
You've told me a couple times, romance is written for women mostly, but men should read it. Why?
Because they would find out what women are thinking and what they desire.
Tamara, it's the first romance novel I have read. It's been eye-opening and it's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, Tamara Lush, author of Constant Craving. That is the Sundial Book Club pick for the month of July. If you want to join the club and read along, just look up Sundial Book Club on Facebook. Ask to join. It's free. We'd love to have you.
I see a house standing there.